Hey there, welcome to the League Life Lockdown. The League Life. I don't know what we're calling this podcast anymore, but it's with Brooksy and Shanaz. I'm Shanaz. Brooksy's on the other end of this very convoluted phone line. Brooksy, how you going?
Yeah, good, mate. I think, like, having your own podcast, you can call it whatever you want, change it up a little bit.
Yeah, I like it.
But use the L words, I think. Lockdown, League Life.
Love.
Any combination of those, sorry, mate. Love, yeah. League Love. What's happening with you?
Hey, whoa.
Awesome balls already. Just want to start.
Yeah. Speaking of League Love, our beloved game could be back in a matter of 4 weeks, we're hoping. May 28th. Yeah. There's a lot of TBC there, as we know. Brooksy, how has your week been? You've been doing a bit of Fox League Live work.
Yeah, loving Fox League Live. There you go. Another L word. Been doing the shows on Thursday to Sunday. There's a few of us in there producing them. And yeah, it's been fun, mate. We're starting to get a bit of a rhythm, move to a different time slot. It's been good.
Cool.
Some interesting guests along the way. The Maddie show on the Sunday is pretty fun to work on. Just digging up some stuff from the 2005 grand final.
All right.
And in the Jersey flag final that year, I was in Canada that year, Schnaz, so I had no recollection of the coverage from that game, from that season. But Channel 9 got Reg Reagan to do the sideline for the Jersey flag final between Parra and the Dragons. Interesting. It was very interesting. Weather reports, the shed report at halftime.
I'm sure it hasn't dated at all.
No, not at all. Do you remember a kid called Josh Lewis?
Yeah,
playing for the Dragons. Yeah, he was having a cracking game, and they crossed down to Reg, and Reg was like, "Oh, I played with Josh's dad, Wally, back in the day," and he started describing like Wally's characteristics with a Mount Franklin bottle as a football.
Oh boy!
And he was shaping up the kick and doing steps on the sideline. It was pretty funny, like going back and looking over that stuff, and that's what. What's been the fun thing about working on the show, Schnaz, trying to find old stuff. Remember those highlight shows from the 90s that were on Channel 10 with David Morrow and Maurice and Graham Hughes?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's been some hilarious stuff from those shows, like digging up some absolute hilarious features like Shane Dye.
I saw that. I didn't realize he was a shark.
A massive Sharks fan, and he was at the Slipper.
That was tragic.
And he had one eye on the Sharkies Raiders game, and ET scored under the post.
Yeah.
He's like, "Oh, Andrew's done it. He's scored." And then Alan Wilson had the goal, like the conversion from in front. He's like, "Oh, he's going to hear about it if he misses this one." He's like, "It's over, straight over the black dot. Sharkies win."
It was so good. It was a different era, Brooksy.
Oh, it was amazing. And then, like, yeah, there's just been some other funny ones along the way. But, it's been fun working on it, long story short.
Speaking of innovation in sport, let's go with the lighter rugby league subject for the moment. We'll get to something heavier in a minute. But coaches mic'd up. I'm hearing it's going to be a thing in 2020. Tell me what you know.
Yeah, there was a bit of a chat article. Michael Shamus, the SMH, saying that as a trade-off with what's going on, there could be a bit of leniency with regards to coaches being mic'd up during games, giving broadcasters access into the sheds pre-game, halftime, post potentially. We already do get a bit of post-match access, which is good. We get interviews, we get the team songs. It's definitely something that we see across the board in the US with players as well being mic'd up during games. I remember being over there recently and watching a Seahawks Niners game, and Bobby Wagner was mic'd up for it. It was awesome. It was really good. And it's sort of, you know, we've tried to do some things with the Nines and the World Nines, and even just at the trials down in Bega at Parra and Penrith, we had Brad Arthur and Niven Cleary on headsets. We had Brad Arthur behind the goals. Remember that, Schnaz?
I do.
Standing up over the fence.
I do.
And he had the headsets on. And yeah, it's good. Like there's potential there. And I understand the access that we could be getting a little too much. But, mate, it's going to be great if they sign off on it. What are your thoughts on it?
I made my thoughts very clear on Twitter, and I'll make them very clear here now. There's only one coach that I want to see, and I want it to be his own daily show. All right, weekly show, and that is Craig Bellamy. The man is personality personified. You and I love him. We've talked about it on this show before. We fascinate over this guy. Is that a word? We fascinate? We are fascinated over this guy. Not just the blow-ups, it's the facials. I think that's
isn't that a thing you wear at the races?
I think Shane Dye had one on after the Sharks one.
His wife did.
But yeah, I would love to see him mic'd up and a camera in there. But there are a number of guys. I mean, I think that Brad Arthur would be pretty good. You just mentioned him before. I think he's a bit of a character.
Yeah, the Eels did a bit of a feature on him last season at one of the home games, and had a camera and a mic in there, and it was edited down like throughout the game, just a bit of feedback. I think it was the Manly game late in the season. It was really good. And that's the sort of stuff. It's great to see some teams doing that. We'd love to have that access to.
Yeah.
I understand there's a bit of stuff that goes on that might not be open to it being aired, but yeah, I just think the more access, the better, like in terms of getting to know the players and the coaches and getting their image and profiles out there.
How would it work, Brooksy? Would they be on some sort of delay, or would you just throw to them, or how would it work from a tech point of view?
So I think what we would do, and what we've done in the past with similar sort of setups, is that players would either wear a mic vest or coaches would wear headsets or whatever. It would come into the production truck or production room. One of our tape operators would have the vision of that camera that's on them synced into an audio connection.
Yep.
And from there, they can cut packages that we can use either throughout the game or post-game.
Right.
Generally, we use discretion. Like as a producer, you'll be like, look, don't make, if they're swearing throughout and it's general chit-chat, we won't air it. But yeah, like we want to mostly provide insight as to what's going on in the game and, you know, big calls, you know, if there's a substitution and that player goes on and does something well, we want to see that as soon as possible. That's the sort of stuff we want to see. We want the fans to sort of know what was going through the minds of the coaches when substitutions were happening or even just plays. It's amazing you hear on the sideline when you're down there with our commentator, Schnaz, just hearing assistant coaches, players yelling out at the players on the field. I remember there was one game, Canberra-Canterbury, and the Canterbury assistant coach, I can't remember his name, but he was yelling at Foran. Like, remember, Foran loves playing short side?
Yeah.
And he was just, like, trying to, like, just go, Foz, short, 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 like, just drilling into him, just attacking that short side. It was great to hear that sort of stuff on the sideline. And I'm sure people who aren't privy to that sort of access would love to sort of get that access, I guess, to what's going on down on the sideline, particularly if there's no fans attending the games.
Yeah. So there's nothing really for the coaches or clubs to worry about in the sense that Fox and Nine would probably either declare or sign something even legally saying, we're not going to make you guys look foolish and we're not going to give away any secrets. We're looking for the emotion. We're looking for something funny. You reached out to a few people on Twitter, Brooksy, about who they wanted to hear from and see in the coach's box. What can you tell me about the reactions we got?
Yeah, there's some interesting names there, Schnaz. Filthy Phil Pryor, who we know. He
absolutely filthy. The filthiest of filth. Love you, Phil.
Robbo and Bellamy for the right reasons.
Yep.
But then Mary McGregor with the third. So, sorry, let me go and start again. I said, sure. Who would be your top three coaches to be mic'd up during a game? And he said Robbo and Bellamy for the right reasons. Obviously, a bit of analysis and getting to know them.
Yep.
Amazing coaches, like you said about Bellio. And then Paul McGregor with my third pick, just to find out what's going on up there.
Okay.
That's a good one.
Moving on.
There's some obvious ones, but I reckon Kearney would be the most interesting. This one's at Warra Steelers.
Oh, boy.
And his name's ill. So, love it. Love it. Great account. Follow it. But I reckon Kearney would be the most interesting. Would be good to know what is in the game plan and what isn't, and seeing the brain explosions. That's not bad.
Okay.
Trent from your department's gone Mary, Kearney and Wayne. First two would be interesting as they're in the hot seat and their sides need to turn it around. Wayne, because it's Wayne.
Yeah, Wayne would be interesting. He wouldn't be saying a lot, I don't think.
Yeah.
But it would be, it would count when he says something.
It would be
something.
Quality?
Yeah.
You reckon it's quality, not quantity?
Yeah.
You've probably got good stuff all the time.
You might also have a bit of a feed, a bit of a spill from his mic onto his assistant coach's mic as well.
Yeah, for sure. Sully said Belly, Dez, Robbo, Dez Hasler.
Yeah.
But it was funny when we were going through some old vision. Remember the old show, The League Lounge on Fox?
Loved
on a
it,
Sunday
yeah.
night
Loved
around
it.
2011?
Yeah.
Brent Cow was on it and you did the Desi impersonations with
Amazing.
The two headphones.
Amazing.
Oh, it was so good. Yeah, there were some great shots and some Desi blow-ups from that season. Yelling at Toves down on the sideline and stuff. It was good. There's Madge is in another one from Daniel Watson Hayes. On the basis of blow-ups and sheer animation in the coach's box, Bellamy, Stuart, Maguire, Ricky.
Yeah.
He's got to be one. That's
a good trio right there.
Got to consider. But yeah, it's pretty much the same names coming through, like you're animated. So you're getting the animated guys. Mm-hmm. You're getting Mary and Kearney just because of the whole situation their teams are in. Someone said Toves.
Well,
yeah, I know he's not coaching anymore, but an honourable mention to whoever the current Spartans coach is. It'd be interesting to see at what point they just give up each week.
I believe in the first round this year. Can you remind me? Do you know who they played? The Titans. They played someone and lost.
They had Canberra in week one, and then Para week two, where they got hammered.
There was a shot of the coach about 20 minutes into the first game, I think it was, and he looked like he was done already. It wasn't good viewing.
Justin Holbrook.
He was done.
Yeah. Had a couple of people say O'Brien.
Yeah.
The Knights' new coach has had a great start. Bellamy, Hasler, Stewart, Desi ripped a door off.
He did.
He did do that. Yeah, that would have been amazing to have some mics in that. And the urban legend is he got the door loosened at half time. Believe it, or Desi just ripping down doors?
No, I believe that, actually.
Yeah.
I believe that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But
Let's hope it comes through.
That's the gist. I think, hopefully it'll come through and we get a few more players doing it as well.
Now, let's move on to something a little bit more serious and a little bit more social, and that is the Fox at Ocar and Latrell Mitchell busted for, not living their life socially distancing as well as potential firearm issues. What's going on there? Tell me your thoughts.
Mate, it's a tough one, but I'm going to put it out there, man. Like, we're trying to get the season up and running. We've got a team coming over from New Zealand getting signed off special consideration to come over and play NRL games. And we've got some players just not adhering to some of the rules and regulations that have been put in place for Australians. To be able to play the competition, Schnaz, is one thing, like in this moment, but to then not sort of show that the respect by adhering to the rules 5 weeks prior to potentially the season starting, I just can't agree with anything about it. We try our best to do, going to and from work, for the people that are working at the moment. There's a lot of people that have stood down. There's a lot of people who have lost their jobs. Mm-hmm. There's people in the industry that have been stood down and lost their jobs in particular that work in the NRL. Mm-hmm. And this is, I hate to say it, but it's a bit of a kick in the testicles for those people because they're not really adhering to it. Like we've seen Nathan Cleary with a bevy of ladies on Anzac Day. Like today, and allowing the look, it's one
hold
thing.
Hold up. What's that? I don't know about that.
Oh, you haven't heard? There's been a photo that's come out today, Schnaz, of Nathan Cleary on Anzac Day, where some girls came over to his place uninvited, and they've posted a photo on his couch. There's at least four of them in the photo, Schnaz. and is basically the Hugh Hefner of Penrith. And he's on the couch with these girls. Wow. And he's allowed it to be. A, he's done that.
Yeah.
And yeah, he came out. I think he came out and said that, you know, they were uninvited. They'd come over. It wasn't something that was planned.
Right.
But to allow it to go on social media as well, like, no, non-awareness of it's just allowing, like, the girls to take the photo and then post is ridiculous.
What you're telling me is there's more than three people in the NRL who are doing this, is what you're telling me.
Yeah, and, yeah, there will... What can we say, mate? Do you reckon there's more?
I reckon there's more.
Situations that are going... And this is a very, very big moment. We're 5 weeks out, Schnaz.
If the numbers are
decreasing.
If you look at the people, and I'm going to pick on two areas, the eastern suburbs and the Sutherland Shire, numerous beaches and areas, the Esplanade was shut down in the last 4 or 5 days because there were too many people crowding around, too many people in the one place. And you saw a mixture of responses from those people, why they should be allowed to do it and all this sort of thing. I'm telling you, and I'm not picking on the NRL here, but there's more than three guys who are doing this. I'm sure there's a whole bunch who aren't. I should point that out. There's a whole bunch who are doing their best. I spoke to one last week, the great Chad Townsend. He's doing his best not to do anything wrong, but... Yeah,
he's living in the digital world, Schnaz. He's all over the pods, the YouTubes, the Facebooks, the MySpaces. Chad's everywhere, man. He's good. He's doing it all digitally. Yeah. But hey, Schnaz, just before we go, there's breaking news for the pod.
Okay.
Here's some of the sanctions the NRL has brought down on the four players involved. So Latrell Mitchell is getting a $50,000 fine.
Mm-hmm.
60% suspended for the remainder of the season. He'll get a one-match suspension.
Wow.
And that's suspended for the remainder of the season. Josh Adokar, the exact same penalties, $50,000 and one-match suspension. Tyrone Roberts-Davis, who's with the Knights at the moment, he's going to get a $10,000 fine and a one-match suspension. Nathan Cleary, $10,000 fine, one-match suspension.
And is that
all
the next...
four players have 5 days to respond to the breach notices before a final determination is made?
Is that the next game they're going to play? They're suspended. Is that what we're saying?
Yeah, pretty much, mate. Suspended for the remain. Yeah, yeah. So it just, I think
this is
just the initial.
That's good.
Yeah. I honestly, like, this is, they've got to come out and do something to show the other players, like, this will not be tolerated whilst they're trying to get this season up and running. But yeah, I just some of the reasoning behind it, it's just like, it's all well and good, but it's bigger than that, guys. It's bigger than so much. And this is a key moment. You guys are on fairly good money.
Oh, yeah.
Latrell Mitchell and Josh Adokar.
Yeah, of course.
A lot of that money is going to be, like, if the season doesn't go ahead, those salaries are going to come down very, very heavily in future seasons for them. They need to make sure that they can get as much of a normal season as possible.
Yeah.
So that the players can get wages that they've been earning in past seasons. And this sort of behavior, it's just not, they're different. And I know there's people that are siding with them in terms of being, you know, it's been very heavy-handed. But these guys are massive players in a global league, like in a league that is televised in the UK, in New Zealand, in the Pacific, in certain parts of America. Like, it's not every game, but, you know, there's money that's filtering through. There's sponsors, there's teams, there's us, there's club employees. So many people that are just frothing for a season to come back.
There's two sides that I look at it, Brooksy. The one you've just laid out very intelligently, which is there's a whole lot of people counting on this, from you and I to their teammates to the fans. And any wrong turn can seriously, you know, put this off the tracks. If if Nathan Cleary gets it and gives it to his grandmother or whatever, then you're probably not going to have any NRL. The government will just say, I don't think so. The other side I look at is we're all just human beings. You know, Josh is faster than me as a runner, but he and I, you know, we're the same. We're the same.
I've seen you down the hallway when it's cake day on a Wednesday at Fox.
I do like my cake. We're just human beings trying to live this life, right? And he and his mates have gone out and done all these things, whereas I'm and you and whoever else are staying in their house and trying to live the way that we're being told for the right reasons. And they've been fined $1,000 by the cops, and there's a bit of shaming going on, that kind of stuff. So there's punishment. But I look at it both ways. I look at it the fact that, you know what, just you should be doing what everyone else is doing. And you're right. Yeah. They are superstars, and it's magnified by a million. What did you think about? I thought there was a bit too much talk in the press about and on social media about, in inverted commas, the race card being played. I thought that was a bit tacky, because I know that they kind of went there, but I didn't think they did enough in those statements to kind of have the shock that all the people kind of went, oh, they're playing the race card. You can't just do it when you want. I felt like that was just people just wanting to bring race into it in a way.
Yeah, I don't think you need to go there. It's them just socializing. It doesn't matter about the reasons. And I don't think people needed to go there in a sense to sort of go, hey, wait a second.
Yeah.
Like, no, it just, it shouldn't be what they're doing. For whatever reason, if it was another group of players down the South Coast or up in Newcastle or up in Townsville doing something similar with their mates, it still wouldn't be condoned. I don't know. I just don't think it should be brought up that's part of it. They should have just owned it.
The problem was they brought it up. So I'm not saying that people aren't allowed to talk about it, because they brought it up. But I felt like the way they brought it up was nowhere near as controversial or as bad as what people were making out. I think it was Josh who said some of his relatives were going through a tough time.
Yeah.
And I think he used the word something like, we wanted to go back to the land and feel more at home or whatever. It's like, well, you can't deny someone their history. Like, that's just... that's their background. Your background is the Gold Coast via the South Coast or whatever, and mine is whatever. But that's theirs, and they spoke about it. But I thought that was a little bit tacky from a lot of media outlets and a lot of people on social media, but that's just my opinion on that.
I just think the thing for me about it too, Shaz, is if you're going to do stuff like that too, like if Nathan wants to go and you know, bring friends over and stuff, or... you know, these guys want to go and hang out with their mates and hang out with their relatives and help each other out in a tough time. Look, whether it's right or wrong, don't effing post it on social media. That's a problem here too.
Yeah.
Like, don't go around showing people, because, A, people have different standards in terms of what they're doing right now. And then as soon as you post something like that, you're telling people what you're doing. If it's something that means a lot to you and the people that you're with, the 12 people that went on that trip, then why is there a need to post it? Why is there, like, you're showing people with the C word on their bike. You're giving people ammunition to say how bad it is, when really they could have just done it, not filmed anything, had that memory together. Yeah. I'm not telling them what to do. Like, I don't want to tell them what to do in that regard.
Yeah.
But there was a better way to go about it. And if it was that, I wouldn't, like, if that's the reason, like, if I'm going with mates and we're, you know, a few of my mates are having a tough time and we want to get together during this time, there's a good chance, and we haven't done that,
yeah,
but there's a good chance I'm not posting anything on social media because I don't want people to know about it. Because I don't want other people to know that they're having tough times and that's why we're getting together. We're good mates. We just get together because we want to get together in this tough time. And yes, the risk involved in, like, hanging out with different people is just, it just allows the virus to grow. And whether we're having a good moment or not, like, we just got to cut it down. And that's the whole premise of this whole, why it's blown up, because the NRL is trying to limit as much risk as possible to infect players, coaches, all the people involved with the day-to-day operations of having games up and running. And this is like, this is an issue because there's more people getting involved in Nathan Cleary's respect and the guys up the coast.
I'm sure it'll be made public as soon as it's all official, but I was talking to a certain media manager at a local club, shall we say, yesterday, and he was going through with me off the record a bunch of the requirements that just came through. He just said, oh, look at this, and it was to do with isolating and medical reports and medical updates and medical checks. And it is extraordinary what the NRL and the government want these guys to go through, as well as like officials and admin and everyone else. I'm going to tell you, Brooksy, it's going to be a miracle if we get through the whole season without someone getting it. And I touch wood and I hope it's, you know, but the lengths that these guys will have to go to and stick to, and we're not even starting, and we've already got four guys who have broken the rules. So I don't know, man. It's going to be an interesting season, obviously.
Yeah, you sort of got that. When the whole bubble and the whole like let's take it to take everyone to Tangalooma Island or up to Gladstone or wherever it was, you had your sort of moments where it's like, oh, surely something's gonna happen. There's how many guys in the NRL? 30 man squads for 16 teams, 480, I think, Schnaz, off the top of my head. Like, you know, you're bound to get a couple of these scenarios going through. Not that I'm condoning it, but you are, right?
Like, yeah, I understand that completely. Like, I understand some of what may happen. I don't really think that the ones we've used for examples should have happened, but I can see other ones. Yeah. Like, you know, we talked about it, I think, on one of the other episodes. The guy who escapes isolation to go meet the girl or whatever. You know, like, people are human and people are going to make mistakes and they're going to be costly. But the ones we've seen so far, like Cleary letting in uninvited girls into his house, like, again, I can understand it, but it's like, A, don't do it, and B, don't take a picture of it.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to have a look at the photo, Schnaz.
I'll go look at it. I can't wait, actually. I think a certain colleague of mine is actually sending it to me right now. Enjoy. Let's move on to something that you're very, very passionate about.
Oh, yeah.
And that is the
Atgard 66 North Carolina.
Yep. The Netflix / ESPN documentary series, The Last Dance. We watched episodes 3 and 4 last night with a heavy feature on Dennis Rodman and Phil Jackson and the Detroit Pistons kind of era, as well, of course, the Bulls and Michael Jordan. I thought it was fantastic. Yeah. Again, very informative as someone who's not over all that history. Really good insight into Dennis Rodman. I mean, they sort of talk about it during the episode, saying, you know, people pigeonhole me, people assume I'm this, assume I'm that, they don't know me. And he was right. Like, we don't really know him. Okay, he's crazy and he's off the hook and all that sort of stuff. He's a brilliant, I didn't realize, one of the best defensive rebound guys in the history of the game. And also, he's a real wallflower, man. Like, he's got a lot of depth to him that I wouldn't have thought.
Yeah, I think just before the Last Dance came out, I think it was about 6 to 12 months ago, late last year, there was a Dennis Rodman 30 for 30, for better or worse.
Yeah.
And it, like, what you saw on The Last Dance is spread out massively in terms of his career growing up at the Pistons, at the Spurs, at the Bulls, his relationship with Madonna. You went into a bit more depth there, but it was a nice little set, like, cross section of him and also the Carmen Electra relationship. I thought that was hilarious. The sort of when Scotty came back and Dennis, like, he didn't really fit in. Because he loved being Jordan's boy.
Yeah.
And then when and Scotty came back, it was like he's got shunned back.
Yeah.
And he was like, I need a holiday to take care of it all. And he ended up on like a 6-day bender in Vegas with Carmen Electra.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's so good.
It was
just amazing.
Like, it was told so well with Jordan. And we want you to go watch it if you haven't watched it. But Jordan basically telling the coach, if you let this guy go for 48 hours,
he's not...
He's not going to come back.
He's not coming back.
And the coach showed a lot of trust. He went, no, you go. And he didn't come back, obviously.
Yeah.
And they had an interview with Carmen Electra, who was really, really cool. She was really open about things. And I wanted to talk to you, Brooksy, about the transformation of Rodman from college through to when he went to Detroit. At college, he was a pretty, inverted commas, normal guy. Like, he looked pretty normal. He acted pretty normal, from what I could tell.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, at any point in your life, obviously, you can wig out and find yourself or experiment or do whatever. But it seemed like when he became the tough guy at Detroit, his life and his lifestyle changed with the piercings and colored hair and everything else.
Yeah. Well, he had, like, in his documentary, it goes into a lot of detail about how he grew up and when he was at high school and college, and how there was a family that sort of looked after him and helped him to assimilate into high school and college. And they had, like, a young son, and he was really good friends with this kid. And there wasn't anything suspicious or anything about it. He just really connected with this young guy, and you saw it when I think he was talking about how when he was on the Barbara Walters interview.
Yeah.
He was like, I'm just acting out like a 10-year-old.
Oh, okay.
Like, you get that vibe, like he's very, very childish, and not maturity wise, but just the way he wanted to act and how he is.
He said something like I felt like a 10-year-old boy, equivalent to I don't want to grow up, basically.
Yeah, and that's what you sort of got that vibe in the documentary before he went to the Pistons. But the big thing, Schnaz, for him, and it didn't really touch on it in the Last Dance, but it did in the documentary, is that when he left Detroit, that's when he lost all the structure. So Chuck Daly was the coach of the Pistons throughout their era, and then they let him go. And so Rodman sort of, that's where you remember you saw that snippet of him in the car park with the shoddy at the stadium. Like, he sort of started losing it that last season of Detroit.
Yeah.
And he was a bit of an interesting character throughout his career in Detroit, but that last season, just before he got traded to the Spurs, is when he started having tough time. And then when he went to the Spurs and he was with Madonna, she sort of opened up his eyes to just being himself and you know, getting that out. Like, the piercings came, the color, the hair color came, the crazy jackets, the lifestyle started coming out in Rodman, because that's what he wanted to, who he wanted to be. And he's just an amazing player and an amazing sort of profile to analyze, like, throughout. And, you know, that Jordan said it, like, he's like, he was so pivotal in their run for those three championships, the second lot of the three championships, sorry. I mean, he's just a great teammate, and,
his role was unbelievable, so physical.
Yeah.
And I believe people did say he is the best in that position historically. Is that close to true?
Not so. I don't think so much that position, but defensively, like, what he could do. Yeah, just, he's one of the best rebounders in NBA history.
Yeah,
no doubt.
Okay, yeah.
And but you saw in that first conference finals where the migraine game for Scotty, and just seeing how he defended, it was like he was just amazing on ball defender as well for someone his size. He grew pretty late, but he was just an amazing talent. Like, and you saw the story with Jordan when they were doing the laps and stuff, and he just, like, it took him four laps to catch up to him, and he just got back from the bender.
We spoke about last week about how Jordan will be seen throughout this series and afterwards.
Yeah,
a new side to him that guys like you were hardcore knew about, but guys like me didn't, and that's a harder edge to him. And I think it'll be the same with everyone, obviously, in this show. But a guy like Rodman, I think overnight has just changed a lot of people's minds about him. Because in my head, he was like, oh, yeah, he was the guy who was always in the news. He was always doing something. His hair and the lip piercing and everything.
The book signing in the wedding dress. You remember that in New York where he was?
The wedding dress.
Amazing. Yeah,
but now, above all that, he's just this really physical player who'd do anything for his team. Tell me about Detroit. I had no idea about this. Their reputation basically is like a more talented version of the Sharks in the early 2010s, where they would just tackle everything that moved. They basically just played so physical that they beat you out of the game.
Yeah, so then they were sort of stuck. Like, when you look back in history, they were sort of stuck in between some really good eras. You had the Lakers and the Celtics that sort of preceded them, and then the Lakers sort of continued on throughout that. They played against them, obviously, in NBA Finals, and then you had the Bulls after them. But they, sort of, Isaiah Thomas admits it, like, they weren't necessarily the most skillful team, but they had physicality. They had Bill Laimbeer, Rick Mahorn, John Sally, Dennis Rodman, all guys that just hustled and played overs in terms of their talent. They had Joe Dumars and Isaiah Thomas. Their backcourt was awesome. They had guys like Mark Aguirre and Vinny Johnson, who were guys that they could come off the bench, or veterans that they brought into the side over that four-year period where they were contenders, and they ended up winning two NBA titles. But I was never really a fan of the Bad Boys. I love the physicality and stuff that they brought. I was never really a big fan, and I think that came to the fore when they got swept by the Bulls and did the walk-off with about 8 seconds left in the game. So basically all the starters had been subbed off.
Yeah.
The game was out of reach for the Pistons. So you can sort of see Laimbeer go to Thomas and go, let's get the F out of here.
Yeah.
And they start walking off before the game was called. And Isaiah sort of recalls it happening to them when the Celtics lost to them. Like, they were enjoying they finally knocked over the Celtics, and Larry and McHale left the court.
Yeah.
But it's like, Jordan, the previous 2 years, went and congratulated them when they'd beaten the Bulls in the conference finals and wished them good luck. And the whole Isaiah Thomas thing about this situation is just bullshit. Like, it's just, own it. Just own it. He does somewhat own it now, but he's still in the documentary, and he was on First Take this morning, still making excuses up about it. It's just like, it's disgraceful. Like, you lost. You got swept. Give him kudos.
Yeah.
Like, at the time, you're grown men, you're professional athletes, but they chose that path. They walked away. And that's the thing that they'll always, they'll be known for that. And the documentary highlights it. And I just think, so far, what we've seen from the first four episodes, like, Jordan's, what we've seen of Jordan is very good. Like, you see the ultimate superstar, the ultimate professional. Yeah, he's chippy with his teammates and stuff, but, and also with Jerry Krause, with management and stuff, but he's, there's a reason why they won six titles. Like, he's just an amazing athlete.
Some of those slow-mo shots they have, I can't really recite the games for you, but there was one last night where he kind of moves towards a hoop. It's almost like a show and go. He does like a 180 and flips it over his back.
That was against Detroit, Bill Laimbeer. Yeah, he's running at him, and it's a give and go, and he does the spin. And
that was ridiculous.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of, so far over the four episodes, there's been, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 shots like that they really give you slow-mo and great angles. And they're things that I've never seen in my life, I don't think. I haven't followed it. I've forgotten about it or whatever. I've seen them once live. But just looking back, just remarkable. Like, just, game-changing way of playing.
Yeah.
And so influential. And I always, I sort of sit back and think of guys like you in particular who are just frothing over this series and over the sport. And I can just see you, just watching that in slow-mo. I can see you trying that down at the court. It's just, it's really fascinating to watch. It really is.
And that was a lure, Schnaz, as a 10-year-old watching the NBA, something that I'd never had the opportunity to sort of see before. Like, I was a massive league fan as a kid, grandma bringing me into the New South Wales Rugby League realm. 92, end up at high school. We're collecting Upper Deck basketball cards, and we start watching Billy Woods on a Saturday morning with the game of the week and NBA action. And you just see these guys. You just see like Jordan and Shaq and Ewing and Kemp and Peyton and all these guys, that 90s era, Alonzo Mourning. Like, they're just amazing athletes. And that's where the love for me started, watching these guys just do this crazy stuff, like watching NBA Jam Session and Michael Jordan Airtime and Playground, like the VHS tapes. And you just see this athleticism, all the mixtape of his highlights throughout his career, and we're just scratching the surface now, but it's so good.
There was a voiceover last night describing one of the seasons, I don't know which one, you'll know, where they recited every accolade he won. And so he won Player of the Year, he won Attacking Player of the Year, he won Defensive Player of the Year as well.
Yeah, it was Doug Collins, who was the coach before Phil Jackson, so he was there for 3 seasons, and he openly admits, like, it was just get the ball to Jordan sort of time.
Yeah.
Remember he says in the
presser,
he's like, get the ball to MJ and get the F out of there.
Yeah.
But yeah, you should, like, his numbers in those seasons, Schnaz, like, I was looking over some of his numbers last night, and I think he had a season where it was 35 points, 6 boards, 6 assists a game, nearly three steals as well. So he was like MVP, Defensive Player of the Year. He won the dunk comp.
Yeah.
Like he had it all. Yeah. He's scoring leader. Like, he was just, that was an amazing time, but they weren't successful, and hence why they sort of made the move to go to Phil Jackson and implement the triangle offense. And that was where can't just all go through Jordan. It's got to be shared around. And subsequently they started getting a bit more success on the court.
I have a bit of a laugh when I see they go for the huddle and I see shots of a very white-looking Luke Longley in the background.
I know, he's such an interesting cameo. Like, and there was Chris Anstey. Did you see when Rodman gets into a tangle and it's a Mavericks? I think he's playing for the Bulls and there's a Mavericks player there. It's Chris Anstey.
Yeah, right.
Another Aussie and he ended up at the Chicago Bulls.
Okay.
Shortly after this era. So yeah, there's a few little Aussie cameos in there.
So there's 6 more episodes, 3 more weeks, which is fantastic.
That's it, man.
We'll come back and wrap more next week. But you wanted to discuss a very good show,
which I'm yet
to watch the second season, which you've watched. And that is the show Afterlife on the Netflix, which the first season was just brilliant. I've read a few things about how brilliant this one is too, and I can't wait. So just talk about it, but no spoilers, but talk about it.
Mate, it's just amazing when you watch it and you've got Ricky Gervais, one of the most talented comedians, as the main actor, and you totally forget it's Ricky Gervais, and it's just this totally different persona that he's playing. He's amazing in it, Schnaz, and all the characters in and around. It brings you down emotionally, but it's a real feel-good sort of show, and as you know from watching season one, and I watched it in 2 nights. I think there's only 6 eps, like half-hour eps.
Yeah.
So it's an easy one to sort of get through over a night or two. But god damn, it pulled the heartstrings, that's for sure.
And if you haven't watched it, it's essentially about grieving, about someone trying to move on after his wife has died at a young age. And Ricky's the star. And as you say, I mean, it's a drama and there are funny moments, but it's a drama. But he has that way of having you in stitches about something, and then he'll just say something else and it'll break your heart in the same moment. And that's a very talented man right there.
I know. He's trying to come to grips with loss and like how do you go on with your life and like what should you do and how should you act? Like, are you owed anything? Or should you go out and be at one with the community or it's just amazing. Like, he's been quoted as saying, like, how many widowers have hit him up and just gone, dude, you just, like, have hit everything on the head.
Yeah.
And we're so appreciative of what you have done with this show. Man, this is the... You know what? And it's so funny when you see, like, you compare reality TV, which is so far from reality, and you see something that he's written, produced, and starred in, and it just is so brilliant. And you just take your hat off to that. As someone, we work in live TV, but you see a production like that,
yeah,
that hits everything, that hits absolutely everything, and
yeah,
he has done so much of it, you just take your hand off that. He's got it. Like, I hope he wins some stuff for it, because it's a great product, and it's just amazing. It has you going up and down.
Yeah, it does.
A couple of hours. But yeah, I don't know. For someone who's like an idol in terms of comedy,
yeah,
I'm just so proud that he can bust out stuff like this and really do a lot for the community in all over the world.
Yeah.
It's an interesting time for it to come out too, Schnoz. Like, a lot of people are sort of trying to deal with different things, and that sort of puts things in perspective in terms of family and friends and a lot of different things. But yeah, it was a great watch, and yeah, smash it out, mate. It's definitely one not to sit on the back burner.
All right, well, I'll do that, and we can discuss some more. I'll let you know what I thought of it, but I am looking forward to it, and I have read a few, just people's reactions more than storylines or anything, and very similar to what you're saying, just blown away. The range of emotions, the meaningfulness of it all. And yeah, the first season just literally just stopped me. It was just like, what is this? This is brilliant. And there's not a lot of comedians that will take that risk. I don't know if we talked about it or not, but I remember watching an Adam Sandler film made after 9/11, and it was similar to Afterlife. It was about a guy getting over his wife dying in 9/11. And the guy was Adam Sandler. And it was a drama, a film. And
I don't think I've seen it.
It's good. It's really good. And it's dark. And these comedians that are able to do the drama thing as well, just for me, get an extra tick. Obviously, it's not a requirement. I mean, I doubt very much our hero Jerry Seinfeld could do drama, for example. But
yeah,
and he's the king. But I really respect those that can do that as well. Just to have that other side to your talent is just remarkable. And Ricky's written and directed and produced and done everything. So it's extraordinary. And I'm a big fan more so because of this than his stand up or whatever. His stand up's great. And I love the fact he loves animals and that sort of stuff. But when he does things like this, he's drawing a line in the sand and saying, hey, this is what I can do, you know? So,
yeah,
great stuff.
I did something funny during watching it, Schnaz, and I don't know if other people do it with Netflix. So basically, I sat down on the Sunday night to watch it, got through three eps and fell asleep.
Yeah.
And then went to watch it on Monday, and I just went, oh, I think I was up to episode 4.
Oh, no.
I went in and started watching season 1, episode 4. And I was like, this is all familiar. Mate, I've seen this before. Maybe I did watch this, and then looked and realized that I selected season 1 instead of season 2. I did that with Narcos. Like, I was like, wait, isn't he dead? Why is he back? I thought it was like a retrospective scene, and then realized I was a season behind.
Yeah.
It's, you know, sometimes when you go a little too far, it can actually take you all the way back when you try and watch it again. There's some little quirky things like in Netflix. I think we touched on it last week. Like, are you sure you want to continue watching?
Like, are you still watching?
Yeah, I love it. It's so good. Are you still watching? Hey, loser, are you still watching Netflix?
Oh, boy.
Oh, it's so good.
All right, Brooksy, I'm gonna get out of here, my man. But
yeah, get out.
Thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
And we'll talk again soon on the podcast. Just run through our socials, if you'd be so kind.
No problem. So League Life NRL is our handle across Twitter, Facebook, and the Instagram. I think, Schnaz, your MySpace page has just got shut down. I got an email. So Tom from MySpace, I think it was. It's like, look, guys, we're trying to cull down some of the websites during COVID-19. And unfortunately, League Life NRL is there. You remember you could put the tracks on? Like, you could put like your favorite songs at the time? Yeah.
Your top eight friends.
Sam Schnazzy. Top eight friends. Oh, that's all right.
That was always a big thing. Who's in your friends?
Who would be in your top eight friends now, Schnatz? Would you have any famous people in your top eight friends?
On our podcast or just in general?
No, you're at Sam Schnazzy at the MySpace.
Yeah,
who would be your top eight friends?
I'd have some famous people in there. Famous to me.
Chad Townsend.
Chad would be in there, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Chad's a rocker from way back.
Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah, I've hung out with Bruce Springsteen, so he's a friend. I'm calling him a friend. He'd be on there. That's probably the most famous, let's face it.
The owner of Shark Island Brewery.
There's a few of them, so I'd have to throw them all in. I'm sorry. Like five or six of them.
Oh, there you go. You're done. You're done.
And probably Andrew Voss, who sent me a text last week.
Oh.
He's a chatty. He's a chatty texter, I'll tell you that. Chatty.
New phone, who dis?
No, just a lot of back and forth from the Voss man.
Oh, good son.
But he's a wonderful, nice. I want to point out, he's a wonderful human being. So, in case you're wondering what he's like, he's a wonderful human being.
That's it. iTunes and Spotify.
Let's work on the endings to our podcasts.
That's all right. This is exactly what we want, and that's exactly what our four fans need.
There's more than four. I see them. There's more than four.
Nice.
All right. I will talk to you soon. I will see you later.
Yep. Marcus, bye for now, Schnoz.